On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York, and the host of On the Ground. Today, we certainly have some distinguished guests. We'll be speaking with Guru Dilip. He is the global chairman of the World Yoga Community. We'll be speaking with Connie Sobhan-Sensor. She is the vice president of GNEC, and she's chief representative of the League of Women Voters to the United Nations. What we're talking about is not their particular organizations today. We're speaking with them today because of the Summit of the Future, which I also attended. And I think it's important for those of you who did not attend or are not familiar with the Summit of the Future that it is supposed to be one of the United Nations vehicles for the pathways for the future and for implementing the goals of the strategic development goals. Now, will it work? Will it be effective? How will it affect you? How can you affect it? Well, that's what we'll be speaking with about today with Guru and Connie. So let me start first with Connie. Connie, thanks for being with us today. And tell us, what was the Summit of the Future about from its beginning? What was its purpose before we look at what actually happened?
Well, a couple of years ago, Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, realized that the UN Charter and the way that we've been doing business is not in sync with the current relevance to society as we now know it. The UN Charter and the UN was initiated 80 years ago, and at that time there were only 53 countries. Now there are 193 countries that are member states of the United Nations. And one of the reasons was that many of the African countries were colonized at that time. So we've seen big changes in terms of, you know, autonomy of countries. We didn't have an issue with the climate crisis. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have artificial intelligence and the kind of conflicts that we have now between Sudan, Ukraine, and Gaza. So the initial UN Charter called for it within 10 years to have a revision or review of the charter because they realized that 10 years post-World War II, there would be a lot of changes in society. And that review and revision has never happened. So there was a call for examining reform of the UN Charter and also accelerating pathways to achieving the SDGs. And the way that they went about looking at this was working on developing a pact for the future. And the pact covered a broad range of themes, including peace and security, sustainable development, climate change, digital cooperation, human rights, gender, youth, and future generations, and the transformation of global governance, realizing that we need global governance to be a sustainable planet, a sustainable humanity, especially with regards to climate and the safety of the internet and the way we communicate. So I think that that was the initial goals of the Summit of the Future. We had some preparatory civil society conference in Nairobi, Kenya in May that was geared towards accelerating the pathways to achieving the sustainable development goals and also in preparation for this Summit of the Future. So that's pretty much the background information that I can give you right now.
Well, it's important information, and I want everybody to know that our GNEC reporter will also have articles that deal with the background and some of the things that were the concrete informational foundations of Summit of the Future. Now, the Summit of the Future, I'm going to go now to speak with Guru, took place very recently. So we're just a few weeks after the Summit of the Future occurred. We're not sure what the complete impact is. But a lot of people did walk away with a certain amount of elation because the word multilateralism or the countries working together was used a lot. But Guru, in your observation, what do you see the effectiveness of what actually happened is? Is there successes, disappointments? What's your perspective?
I'm reading a lot of articles government report from the summit of the future, the write-ups like outcome of the summit of the future, transforming global governance to build peace, promote human rights, and achieve the sustainable development goals. When you look at even after the summit of the future, world is burning. There is no peace anywhere. There is no human rights. Or they cannot bring sustainable development goals in a proper way. So actually, I felt like this is like a fancy conference, not going to the grassroots level with the people. That's not appropriate for UN to implement like this, just having a conference back to back. They had to work together with the different countries and leaders and with the people. Otherwise, we cannot achieve SDG at all. That felt really bad about this conference, but still, I attended so many meetings, listened to people, talked with the people. That's part of our promotion. You know. That is my experience with these 4 days.
Yes, I have to say that it was pretty slick. For those of you who did not attend, it did start with a movie. It started with a song. At the beginning, the General Assembly was filled, but as the day went on, it was a very long couple of days, you saw fewer and fewer attendees, and I think this is one of the disappointments. The idea that the NGOs or the civil society, we had a special room associated for us, but it was empty. And most of the people who did attend that were part of civil society that wanted to see and hear ended up in the trustee lounge. So this is important. Important has to do with the attendance. We almost felt that there was more security and New York City police than there were civil society attendees. So that's part of the disappointment. On the other hand, as Connie said, this was quite a resultful event. So it was more in the intangibles of what happened. When we come back, we're going to go back to Connie and talk about some of these really concrete things that did come out of the Summit of the Future. So don't you go anywhere. GNEC.NGO, GNEC.NGO, that is the website that will give you the information that you need. What information? Well, prior events, events to come, scheduled events, and of course, take a look at our media page and see what's happening in the news. It's also the place to read our NGO reporter, one of the most important documents that comes out of GNEC just for you. And we are back again, and we're speaking to people who were really on the spot, as they say, really did go to the Summit of the Future and have deep understanding of it and deep opinions. So, Connie, let us know about the documents that came out of this and what they may mean. And perhaps you have a slightly different view of the resultfulness of the Summit of the Future from Guru.
Adrian, thank you for the question. And before I answer it, I just wanted to add some commentary to what you had said. I feel like where the actual Summit of the Future presented the same issues as it was intended to resolve, which was the shrinking space for civil society engagement. We had impact coalitions that formed over common topics that were intended to feed into developing or negotiating the Pact of the Future. And I'm not sure that those voices were really heard and listened to. So most of the impact coalitions dissolved, and the ones that are continuing their work have not been given space to hear their voice. Specifically, health, the UN Charter reform will continue, as well as women's groups focused on gender equality and the Global Digital Compact and the Pact for the Future Generations. And I think it's important for us to think about being good ancestors when we talk about the Pact for the Future. And we need to have that voice of civil society to have that space. I'm not so sure that, just like what you said, it seemed like the space was shrinking, that there was more security and barriers to people actually physically participating in the Summit of the Future. than there were open spaces for us to attend. And I think that that turned a lot of people away because they thought they just wouldn't be able to get in with all of the security warnings that we had ahead of time about how difficult it was going to be to access, and almost discouraging people, saying, well, you know, there'll be very small space for physical participation. So, you know, participate online. And when you participate online, you really are observers rather than active participants. You don't have your voice heard in the same way. So I think that that was a real challenge for this Summit of the Future and civil society participation.
May I just interject here? From at least 80th Street in Manhattan down to, say, 30th, it was difficult to get through the streets, and you did have a feeling of concern about going in. So all of that was also part of the atmosphere. Once you got in, things did change, and then it morphed into what Guru had said, a very fancy and a very formal conference. But as we said, I think that our NGO people need to know some of the documents that came out of it that you are very, very well aware and versed on, and possibly will give them an opportunity with links in the reporter to actually read them for themselves. So tell us a little bit about the pacts that occurred, like the Global Digital Compact and so on.
Yeah, so the three key documents that were outcomes of the Summit of the Future was the Pact of the Future, and that was adopted within the first few hours of the Summit of the Future by the member states. So again, civil society had an observer role, and any discussion centered around the Pact of the Future had already taken place by the time the conference opened. Russia had proposed an amendment, and it was rejected by 143 of the member states, and the Pact of the Future went forward and passed, was approved. The Global Digital Compact was also approved, which focuses on everyone having equal access to the internet as a way of communication, and also safety worldwide, that there's some sort of global governance over digitalization so that we become a safe and secure world as we have open communication. And then the Declaration for Future Generations. Again, I just love the term, be good ancestors. You know, think about how the decisions that we make now will affect people, not just in the next year, but in the next century. You know, what kinds of things are we doing to preserve the planet, looking at climate in particular, so that we have the biodiversity and we have support for human life and we have, you know, a safe environment. So those three key documents will guide some of the decisions that are made at the United Nations in the future. And you can ask governments to take hold and adopt these declarations and pay attention to them, but we can't force them to do it. So I think, just like what Guru said, let's see what happens next. You know, what actions are being taken? We have the documents, we have the intention, but then where is the action?
So I'm going to take a break deliberately because I'm going to call on Guru, as you said, right now when we come back, because he said something very powerful. He said the world is burning. And my question, to give him a chance to think about this, is, as civil society, and maybe we're very concerned with the attrition of the power of civil society because of the number of governments we have, the conflict the governments are in, their internal concerns, how much impact can we have? But I would like to ask Guru, as the world is burning, we have issues, as Connie said, that we didn't have 80 years ago, from climate change to food insecurities, what we can do. It's a big question. What can we do? These are NGOs, so don't you guys go anywhere. If you're enjoying this podcast, this does not have to be the last one that you hear. Please remember that not only do we upload these podcasts every single month at gnec.ngo, you can also hear us on Apple, Spotify, and all of the major disseminators of podcasts. So if you're a podcast fan, don't forget to make On the Ground one of your favorites and give us a good review. Well, we are back, and as promised, poor Guru, he's getting the big question. And of course, I'm going to ask Connie the same question. But let's start with you. In this moment of conflict, where we don't have peace, we may have had this better, the different kind of conference it was 3 or 4 years ago. What can we do as civil society? Are we really getting marginalized, or is there a way to be more powerful? And how would you work to impact what's going on right now as it came out of the Summit of the Future?
Again, that's the best question you give to me. 25 years I'm coming to the UN in different forms. You know, in the beginning part, when I came, that was Secretary Kofi Annan was running the show here. He was so down to earth. He was friendly with everybody. I didn't see that type of behavior pattern these days at the UN. Every single year is getting stricter, more security. People are even not smiling each other. That's the way it is coming up. So when we work for the community as NGOs, we are working for the people. The UN made for the people. They are running because of our taxes. So they have some commitment. They have to fulfill their duties as a community servant. I won't say leaders. They're supposed to be a servant. You look at the Gandhi or Mother Teresa or Martin Luther King. So many great leaders came to this world to take care of people. I like to see every single diplomat working for the people, not sitting in the throne, having a party and going home. So NGOs can do much better than these people. You see how many, over 15,000 NGOs working with the UN. They are doing wonderful job than the UN official. So they should promote NGOs to do their work and support them in every aspect, you know, and bring more NGOs to the UN system so we can fasten our activities. Otherwise, this will delay as earlier, 79 years. We are sitting in the same position, the same bylaws. We never change things. That's not appropriate. So we have to educate these officials how to work in the community. Most of them never had a community service. They had an examination to become a diplomat coming here. They don't know how to work with people.
You know, you remind me of the greatest quote that's most inspirational to me in my life, and I'll paraphrase it, which is Margaret Mead, who said that never underestimate the power of a few people to get things done and make change. In fact, perhaps those the only way that change has ever been made. And it's very inspirational. And what I think Guru was saying is keep it up. You're so, so needed. But Connie, I'm going to express a problem that I see. My world and my NGOs are all in the world of aging. You had mentioned this already a few minutes ago. I was not only feeling that the older adult who tried to be the good ancestor was left out. I felt that almost we were being criticized. A finger was being pointed. And I saw it, for those of you who were not there, you will have a picture of this because I took a picture. It will be in the NGO reporter. It is a tiles that were on the floor as soon as you walked in and you got through the gates of the United Nations. And it was a quote. It was a quote that simply said, "Our future strategies cannot be that of our grandparents." Well, I thought perhaps my generation did a couple of things that were right. And that was off-putting. But much more important is what you said, Connie. And that was we did not seem to be included. There was one mention here and there. So even in the nation states, when they made their three-minute presentations, each of them talking about the Summit of the Future, I was able to count in 2 days only three that said anything about the importance of the older adult. So I know that this is a feeling that you have too, perhaps taking from a different angle. What do you have to say about that? And is there anything that the NGOs that deal with issues of aging can do about
it? Well, I think that Guru made a very good point, and you as well, Adrian, that we don't have the open channels of communication with the ambassadors, with the people who are making those decisions at the UN. And it was a great hope of mine that the Summit of the Future would open those doors, that we would have more collegial relationships with member states and UN entities, and not just be in silos like here's civil society and the NGO community, and here are the member states, and here are the UN entities. We need to figure out a pathway to open those doors and all be in the same room at the same time with equal value to everyone's voice. And I think that's really what's missing. If we can find a way to do that, to mandate that in some way, to say, okay, here is a room full of ambassadors that are willing to listen to what you have to say and work with you. And again, it reiterates what both of you have said. But when we go back to the intergenerational piece, I think that we need a voice that recognizes that we're all aging, right? From this moment on, we're all getting older. And it includes intergenerational perspectives and collaboration rather than isolation. And a quote that I had heard that I think was meaningful to me was that when you're young, you have energy and time, but no money. And when you're working years, you have money and energy, but no time. And as you age, you have money, time, but no energy. So let's look at how we can harness the time of youth and the aged, the energy of youth, and perhaps the money and wisdom of the aging to collaborate and find solutions to our pressing problems, chief among them being the climate crisis that affects the health and life of our planet, and to support life as we know it. I mean, this is, if we don't have our health and we don't do something to support that in terms of the environment and how we protect it, where are we going? We're going the way of the dinosaurs and we'll all be extinct. So it really is no longer just climate change, but climate crisis. And it is a problem that perhaps older people have contributed more to than younger people because we've been here longer, but it doesn't mean that we should be throwing blame to one side or the other. We should be moving forward to find, you know, solutions together. Seeking solutions collaboratively and intergenerationally will be what helps us to solve these problems.
Well, I certainly agree, but I would like to change your quote for at the end, because we'll be soon 77. I have more energy than I ever had my whole life.
Oh, God bless.
You know, and I want everyone to know that I'm not alone, that there's a new old age with a lot of energy out there, and it's a shame that it has no place to go. This is unharnessed energy. I like to say, Connie, the world does not expect much of you as you're older. Make it sorry. So before we talk about the action days, we're going to have a new panel coming on with regard to action days. I'll get back to you on that, Connie. I want to go and give Guru the next to the last word on this. So you see many issues, Guru, and you really are a veteran. You have been around for a very long time watching what was going on. Now, have you seen a change in the attitude? You've given us a really deep picture of the attitude of the folks within the UN and how they might get more in touch with what's going on, which is why our show is called On the Ground. They could be more in touch with what's really going on locally and on the ground. But have you seen a change in NGOs' attitude, for better or worse, in terms of their missions and how they approach their missions and what could they do better so that these great goals, Summit of the Future had some good goals in there, could really be realized with our help? Do you see a change that we can have attitudinally, not just within the United Nations, but within the world of civil society?
With the diplomats or staff, I see more diplomats arrogance towards NGO members. Some security guards can be mean to our members. And same times, NGOs, some NGOs, they are only paper-oriented organization. They are not having real work in the society. So they'll make an organization and enter at the UN, and they are not doing the work, and they come here to show they are wonderful people. That's not correct. So here, doesn't matter whatever country they are coming here, we have to work together. It's a globalized system has to be done. In that case, we have to educate people. They can have conferences on that, because all the people are not aware about the UN system. So they need a refresher course about the system. And security should know how to treat NGOs. They are not third-class people. A lot of them are highly educated, highly officials. They come here. I had advantage because I have religious background. I have diplomatic background with the different diplomats. So I got advantage, but other people cannot have that advantage. So we need a strategy to make the changes at the UN. Everybody has to work together for the people. And I had to mention what Kony said, because we all are getting older and new generation will come and we'll be in the last part of our life. That doesn't mean we are going to stop our work. We had to continuously work together. Last Saturday we had a program. We had toddler to 90 years old person in our event. Every different types of age people celebrating life. That is a real action for the people.
Beautiful.
So we had to take care of the human beings, animals and plants and the nature. That's the work we had to do through the UN.
Well, you know what you've done is you've given us marching orders, because these are the kinds of things that we can inspire NGOs, you know, toward doing. Now, before we go on to the action steps, I want to conclude with Connie, because I think all of us had a little bit of disappointment. Remember, we were all very revved up in going here and seeing what was going on. And some many good things came out of it, for sure, but not to the limit and the extent that we had hoped. However, one of the great things were the action days, which was prior to the Summit of the Future. And we're going to have a whole panel on that for folks who have participated in the action days. But kind of give us the, you know, what they call the tease in show business, the transformation from the Summit of the Future to what these action days were. And you have some very positive attitudes about what happened during those days.
Yeah, I think the action days certainly were designed for civil society participation. And again, like Guru said, there was a lot of live entertainment amongst them, but you did have an opportunity to have a voice as the NGOs. And again, there wasn't as much interaction between the member states, the ambassadors, and civil society, but it was a space for civil society to come together and amplify their voice. I attended one day that was focused on the Global Digital Compact and AI, and they brought in great world voices related to AI and some really innovative ideas about what we can do with AI related to early warning systems, health, affordable cell phones for everyone, to companies working to make them less than 20 US dollars so that people would have more global access to the internet, satellites versus cell towers, and harnessing solar energy through cell phones. Some of it was beyond my scope of comprehension, but certainly there were so many innovative ideas brought forward. I think that it created a lot of positive energy and hope with the action days. So looking forward to hearing what our next team is going to have to say about that.
Well, I thank both of you so much. I mean, we were speaking here with Guru Dilip. He is the global chairman of the World Yoga Community. We're speaking with Kani Sobhan Sensor, Vice President of GNEC and Chief Representative of the League of Women Voters to the United Nations. And we're telling it like it is. One of the things that I hope you appreciate for all of our shows of On the Ground is they're very open. Our guests are always very forthcoming. But most importantly, if you're an NGO, or any member of civil society or a concerned citizen anywhere in the world, we're on your side. We'll be right back. Don't you go anywhere. You can become a much more active member of GNEC. There are so many ways to participate, from reading our social media posts, from reposting those posts, from making your organization more active in our subcommittees, and of course, by submitting your thoughts for guests for this podcast, as well as articles and information for our reporter. So now I'm going to talk about folks who actually were speakers at the event, the Action Days, which were the preliminary to the Summit of the Future. And we're going to ask them some questions that I think will be not only interesting to you with regard to what happened there, but how you can begin to participate in some of these things. We'll be speaking with Dr. Joseph DiMaia. He's the United Nations representative from the Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues. We'll be speaking with a very good friend of mine, Sandra Timmerman, who's not only on the board of GNIC, but she is also one of the representatives to the United Nations from the International Federation on Aging and a very active member of the Committee on Aging and somebody who's been an aging activist for very, very many years. All right, let's start with you, Sandy, for a moment. You had the opportunity to actually speak at one of the side events at the Action Days. How did you get that opportunity? Were you invited to speak?
I was invited because I am board, as you mentioned, of the Global NGO Executive Committee representing IFA. Africa is a very young continent, and some people probably wondered why I was speaking representing an organization in aging. But like the rest of the globe, Africa is also aging. And so UWM wanted to give me an opportunity to make that perspective known and to be part of the conversation about the reform of the Security Council.
Yes, and all of the statistics show that emerging countries, Vietnam as an example, is an under-resourced country. You think of them as young countries that don't have this issue as yet, but that is not so because statistically, the African continent, Vietnam, Cambodia, they're actually increasing in the aging population by greater degree than westernized nations.
It's really true, and I think that younger people who are not really contemplating their own aging need to start thinking about what kind of world they want to be in when they grow old. So it's not only bringing in older voices now who have a perspective of history and have experience, but also to get them to think a little bit about making a society that's equitable for people of all ages, where everybody has a voice.
Well, hear, hear. Now, let's talk to you, Joseph, because you also participated as a speaker. Very different subject, the subject of the reformer of the United Nations Security Council. Now, were you invited? How did you become a speaker?
Well, just like Sandy, earlier this year, I became a board member of the Global NGO Executive Committee. I feel honored by that, following 25 years of being a UN NGO representative for the Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues. So in those 25 years, I have witnessed a great deal in the civil society circumstances at the UN. And this invitation was extended to me by Mr. Robert Otu, the international president of the Global NGO Executive Committee. So when he extended the invitation, I welcomed it very much. And I have to say this, my direct response was based on recent developments in our world. And I've come up with saying that is, you know, there is a civil and moral imperative. And by civil, I mean we, the people, a civil society. By moral, I mean the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And by imperative, I mean we really need, we need action. There's a great urgency to make things different in the world as it is today. So I thought that this speaking engagement would give me an opportunity to contribute something to that.
Well, this is wonderful. So what you just heard from Joseph is that there is power here. You can make a difference by speaking. But I'm going to ask you a really upfront question, Joseph. Do you think that the Action Day, particularly the one that you were involved with, made the point? You gave us a really good review of what I think your point is. Was it heard? You're talking about the reform of the United Nations Security Council. Who do you think heard you? Was it the civil society that was in the room? Could you get to the UN Security Council with thoughts? How powerful do you think these action days were with regard to the one that you took part in?
That's a very good question, Adi, and it's not easy to answer. I think there's an issue between the United Nations itself and its missions and its relationship with us, the people, the civil society, the NGOs. Over the years, a rift has appeared. Physically, also, the access for NGOs to United Nations headquarters in New York and elsewhere also has been restricted. So any opportunity for civil society, NGOs to speak up must be embraced by us. So now what effect that will have, we'll see. You know, I've been doing this now for 25 years. And when I started as a UN representative, a distinguished gentleman, he was at the foundation of the United Nations as an NGO representative. And he told me, Joseph, look at the United Nations and its function as water dripping on a stone. Yeah, drip by drip, drip by drip, it will eventually make a difference. Patience, perseverance, and persistence. And the United Nations was founded to bring people together, yeah, all over the world. It is still the only place where people can meet and have a conversation and a communication to address these very important issues. As I said, the civil and moral imperative. So I believe, and I'm hopeful, that these side events will make a difference.
You know, it's very eloquent. And for those of you who listened from the beginning of the show, you know that Guru Dilip said something very similar in his own way, that a difference will be made, but it's hard work. You have to show up. You have to persevere. You have to try. Sandy, we're going to take a little bit of a break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you a question about the statement that you made about the importance of intergenerational cooperation, work, and efforts, and ask you how you felt about the action days, whether it was inclusive of the older adults. Don't you go anywhere. We are expanding our social media presence. We are expanding our reporter, and we are expanding this podcast. But we would like you and every NGO to know about it. So we are creating a directory. Don't be left out, and don't allow your partners, your colleagues, and your supporters to be left out. Make sure that we have your contact information by making sure that you get on our website, contact us with your contact information. It is so important that you meet each other and that we are able to reach out to you and support you. Okay, we are back. So, Sandy, I gave you that challenge because it was very clear from Connie's conversation and my conversation at the beginning of the show that we did not think the summit of the future was inclusive with regard to the mature older adult. Well, what about the action days?
Well, I don't know about every session or side event that was held during the action days, but just in general, the Pact for the Future, which came out of the Summit for the Future, only had one representation on aging. It's very youth focused at the UN, and I certainly understand that because we've got so many younger people all over the world, particularly in Africa, but other continents as well, who have something at stake in their future. But we don't feel that older people should be left behind for so many reasons. One we talked about before, and that is that every continent on the globe is aging at different rates. And the problem is in the developing countries, there often are no support systems to take care of older people in need. Communities have generally thought that the families would do all the support. That's just one reason why older people should be at the table. but also because they have so much to give. Yes. And it's a lifespan perspective that we're looking at. Older people should be part of the discussion too. Uwam had a wonderful panel of people and they really made very compelling cases. But I felt at times that I was the lone voice, not only at this event, but at other events where older people's concerns are represented. And I thank you for including me in this session because it is, after all, sponsored by the African Youth Movement.
Yes, that's right.
But he does see the need to bring in the voices of people who are a little bit older.
So I'm going to go to Joseph now, and you can comment on any of that, but I have a separate question for you. It's the organization that where you are the representative to the United Nations from is the Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues. Are you seeing a greater psychological impact from the problems of climate change and social issues and migration and everything else you must be studying there on the psychology? And is there any difference between the generations with regard to that? So it's a big two-part question.
I'd love to comment on that, but let me indeed first comment on Sandy. Yes, the side event and the presenters really made a fantastic case for their NGOs and for their mission. And Sandy, absolutely, the voice of older people should get more recognition. And the other speakers emphasized the need for African nations to get recognition from the Security Council, to have a voice at the Security Council, if not even being able to, to make decisions. People don't know this quite well, but the resolutions by the Security Council, they are binding. The resolutions by the General Assembly, they are advisory resolutions. But the Security Council has binding resolutions, and that's why it's so important that huge populations like on the African continent, but I also would like to include India and also, the Latin American continent like Brazil, that they can have a seat around the table of the Security Council. Now, in terms of your question about, the social issues, including psychological, absolutely. My NGO has written several statements about the psychological impact, especially the mental health impact of climate change, and of course also of these armed conflicts. Those are tremendously traumatizing experiences for people in those terrible circumstances, and they are transgenerational. They continue to be experienced by the next generations also. And that psychological sensitivity and empathy for people who suffer those mental health consequences of armed conflicts, and of course also climate change, migration, that needs to get more of a recognition at the United Nations. And I'm pleased to let you know that I was executive committee member of the NGO Committee on Mental Health. And over the years, we managed to get a resolution by the General Assembly that when health is mentioned, it must include physical health and also mental health. So talking about dripping on a stone, if you do it long enough, you can make a difference. And that is, I think, a very important example of how civil society can make a difference at the United Nations.
Well, I am so happy that we ended on an up note. And I want to thank both of you. I want to thank all of our panelists today. They were just remarkable, wonderful, telling it like it is. And remember, this show is your show. This is Adrienne Berg saying goodbye for now from On the Ground. See you soon.